Speaking of books.
Jesus Christ.
I'm Alex Higley.
And I'm Lindsay Hunter. And I'm a writer. Bud. Welcome to I'm a Writer, But. Today we have Hillary Leichter, who is the author of the novel Temporary, which was a finalist for the New York Public Library Young Lions Fiction Award, the Center for Fiction First Novel Prize, and was longlisted for the Penn Hemingway Award. Her writing has appeared in N+1, The New Yorker, Harper's, The New York Times, and Conjunctions. She teaches at Columbia University. Welcome, Hillary.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
This is so exciting. And I can't imagine, like, a list I would salivate over more than your publication history. It's like N+1 and Conjunctions and
what?
I'm intimidated.
Thank you so much. No, oh, please don't be. It's a list. I say it as a prayer every night before I get a bed.
I get that.
I'm going to start doing that too. Well, we're so excited to have you. We were just telling you that we read your book like last year or a year ago and just freaking loved it, and then have been revisiting it this week and reminding ourselves how brilliant it is and bizarre and truly its own thing. And just if any of you out there haven't read it, treat yourselves. It is such a great book. So thank you. We're so excited to have you.
Yes.
Thank you so much. That's really high praise coming from both of you. And I mean, you're now having read it again, you're one of 15 people who have read my book.
Get out of here.
And 4 of those people are you. So
yes, we're in an elite group. Finally.
You're in the club. We have jackets and we have hats.
Oh my God. Ooh,
what color are the jackets? Are they yellow or?
I feel like they have to be yellow.
They got to be yellow. Yeah.
I'm ordering them right now. As
we're oh, cool. Oh, XL. Perfect. Put me down for 3.
Got it.
Well, now we're going to make you read to us. What are you going to read?
I'm going to read something old. This is something old, something new, something borrowed, and something blue. No, this is a very, very short story that I wrote in, I want to say 2013-ish. Ooh. Yeah, and it's called Two Judies.
What? My daughter's name is Judith.
Is it really? Oh,
yes.
Well, okay, we'll talk about that after.
Okay.
I don't know how you're gonna feel.
Okay.
this is for you, Judith, but only if you like it. Two Judies. The party was set for Thursday, and someone invited the wrong Judy. We wanted the funny Judy with the drinking problem. Someone invited the other Judy, who was nice enough, but not the kind of Judy you'd want at a Thursday night party. When she arrived at the door, we tried our best to hide our disappointment. We looked at each other wondering, who invited this Judy? We took her coat and offered her a beer, but Judy was on a cleanse. She was always cleansing, and it made us feel oily, fleshy, questionable. Oh, Judy, someone mumbled. So glad you were free tonight, one of the girls said, pushing some energy through the point of her exclamation. To be honest, I'm not usually available on Thursdays, Judy said. It was great that you gave so much notice. This wasn't true. Judy was available all week, every week, which is partly why we didn't care for her. But it made us think about our own Judy, sitting at home, keeping her Thursday night free for us. Could we invite her last minute? Was that kosher? Someone excused himself and went to go dial her, but he dialed the wrong Judy again, and Judy's phone started buzzing in the living room in her purse. She answered it, confused, and looked at us. Hey now, is this a party game? She asked. We paused, then said, Yes. How do you play? She asked. The other Judy would not have asked such a doltish question. She would have pretended to know the game or invented the rules for us, smoothed over our awkwardness with a jump in place and a jog around the room. For a second, we could see the current Judy register our discouragement, and maybe she sensed that she wasn't our first choice, was not what we had hoped for. It must be a terrible feeling to be the wrong Judy and to know it. Someone thought of this and offered her the best red bowl of corn chips. She reminded us about her cleanse, but this time we weren't quite as annoyed. Maybe we could grow into this Judy, we thought, like a formal suit or a gym membership. Someone sat next to her on the couch. Maybe she'd even start to prefer us. Maybe we could shape ourselves into the right kind of crowd for the wrong kind of Judy. It's true, we were all so much younger then. None of us were the best versions of ourselves, not even first thing in the morning. Not even the Judys were the Judys they hoped they would be. That's all.
That was so charming. And as my Judith is 3 years old, she's often quite a few different Judys throughout the day. So
I'm sure. Also, Judith is a power move. Like, I much prefer Judith to Judy. That's
amazing. Yeah, it depends on I don't know if she's going to be Judith or Judy. She, you know, ooh, she's yeah, just, who knows?
Yeah. How old her is prerogative. She?
She's 3 and a half.
Okay, so she has time to figure it out.
Yes.
Hillary, oh, that man. Piece seemed to have kind of a spiritual connectivity to temporary. It seemed like there was a kind of sensibility that you already had in 2013 with some of the tonality of that work that exists in temporary. Can you talk about if there's any connection or if there was anything you were working through in some of that earlier work?
Yeah, I mean, actually, temporary comes from a short story that I wrote around the same time. And so, yes, they are connected, I'm sure, even though I haven't really thought about it. And I was just thinking of something short that I could read for you all today. but I wrote them around the same time. And I had just finished graduate school and was rejoining the workforce full time and was overworked and exhausted and confused about what I was supposed to be doing and in what order and how to follow the yellow brick road toward a career as a writer. And it just, none of it made any sense. And so I was writing a lot of flash fiction and I was writing a lot of stories about that feeling and that mm-hmm. feeling of being lost and not only being lost, but sort of feeling like someone handed out a map and you just weren't there to receive it. Wow. And that was a feeling that I had at that. I mean, I still have that feeling about a lot of things, but mm-hmm. It was a powerful feeling at that time. And I just kind of didn't know where I was supposed to be. And I was writing a lot into that emotion. So yeah, I think they are spiritual. So maybe Judy is the temp's name because she's unnamed. Mm-hmm. I never thought about that, but mm-hmm. she might be one of the Judys, you know.
There you go.
Yeah.
I think that works. I'm forever going to think of her that way.
Me too now.
Gabble bang. How did you know? Can you talk about the feeling of like, okay, I know that this is a short story, but then wait, this thing over here that I thought was a story, I actually want to turn it into a novel. Can you talk about that? What that felt like and how you knew it could be something longer for temporary?
Yeah, I definitely didn't know. And I think that's an important emotion that I need when I start something longer is that feeling of not really knowing if it can work mm. and just kind of flinging things against the wall but in a fun way and it in a different way than when you can't find your way into something and it's frustrating and mm-hmm. and so I was working on another novel for a really long time and it will never see the light of day. I don't think it's just it's just like I don't know. The word is bad, I guess. But I couldn't find my way into it. It was painful. It was like the prose was overworked and shitty, and I just did not know what else to work on. And I went back to some of my short stories, and I went back to Temporary, and I thought it was done because it was published, and you know that's a thing that you feel when something's published that
right.
it's done.
Yeah.
But I thought, oh, hey, this is weird. I wrote this 4 or 5 years ago and I still feel this way. And the emotional concerns of that story were still the things that were troubling me. But in a new way, because I was older. And so I thought maybe there was something more to say there. And I just started playing around with it. And the playing was really fun. And I like being in my sandbox. I like being in my sandbox with a new project and not telling anyone what I'm working on and kind of just having fun. And that was the experience of working on this book. And it almost without my permission became something longer. Before I knew it, it was a novel, and it happened really quickly. And I think it was all because it spoke to the biggest fears and the biggest emotions I had at that moment in my life. And I don't know if every book will be like that I write, but that seems mm-hmm. to be something that's important to me, for the emotional concerns to be very, well, this is a crappy publishing word, but urgent. And at least to me, like if it's something that I felt a long time ago or something that I will feel one day, it just doesn't happen as quickly. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
I totally get what you're saying. And it reminds me of something we talked about with Rachel Yoder about Night Bitch, because she was sort of, you know, doing the same thing. Just like, I actually have more to say, and I have more to say, and I can't, you know, and it was just sort of coming out of her like that. And she just kept following it. And it's a very different book from Temporary.
That book is so good.
Oh my God. I know. Oh, we love you, Rachel.
Yeah, we do.
But yeah, it feels like, in a way, it's like a little manifesto, not little, but it is, you know, like it's its own manifesto and its own little world and language.
Was writing Temporary as propulsive as, I mean, that the experience of rereading it over the past couple of days, I really forgot how propulsive it is and how you just fly through it, and not even in a page turnery way, but just like kind of there's a joyous quality to the prose. There's a joyous quality to the way the prose is laid out on the page. I feel like the length of the chapters, the playfulness of the titles, it really leaps out. And I was wondering if there was that kind of joy in the writing.
That means so much to me to hear. Absolutely. Yeah, it was, I wrote it in a sprint and I was cracking myself up and just, and I just gave myself permission to do whatever I wanted. You know, I gave myself permission to just really kind of free associate my way through the book and not stop for anything. And it was this weird gap in employment where I had work, but I was working from home and I had the time to devote to it. And the stars just kind of aligned and I could, it was a period of time in my life where I could wake up at 2 a.m. with an idea and just pick up my computer and go, and not be late for work the next day because I didn't have to be in an office. And so it worked out really nicely. And I had the most fun ever writing this book. And I feel like a little bit of shame saying that, because I think there's this idea that writing is supposed to be brutal and hard and like, and not joyful.
And yeah, I want to talk about that, because so many people feel that way, right? Like, and I think they're getting confused with
publishing.
Oh my God, thank you.
I was gonna say like the writing can be very joyful, but the fact that you have to, it's an endurance sport, might be where the pain is. Because if you're sitting down and writing and it's painful in a like a not useful way. Like if it's painful because it's emotional, that's one thing. But if it's painful because you're like, I hate this, then that's not the way it's supposed to feel.
But there's also a misunderstanding of endurance, because Hillary started the conversation with us talking about how the Two Judys story was from 2013. She wrote the short story that she ended up pulling temporary from into the, you know, into the novel about the same time. And like the endurance is the fact that you were willing to sit with that project, sit in that feeling, trust yourself enough, you know, sit with the work enough. There's the endurance. The people think that it means, you know, gut it out on a daily basis, hit a word count, you know, hit, and that stuff. I think for some people the performative aspect to that helps them, because I think it gives them meaning in the act. But I would say that's a minority of people. For me personally, that is meaningless. I seek the experience that you had, because I think there's nothing better than when you know a project is right. Mm-hmm. And I think when it's really right, it carries all the way through into the work in a way that is unique. And that's mm-hmm. why I really wanted to ask, you know, was writing it as joyful as reading it? Because that truly carries through. It's not bullshit. It's not like some like, I don't know. It's amazing how powerful that is, I think.
That means so much to me. And it like, because I guess it was an experiment. I didn't know if you could like transmute the way you were feeling to the reader through just feeling it while you were writing. Mm. And I hoped that was the case. I hoped that it would read as a joyful kind of like explosion of energy and ideas and heart. But I didn't know if it was enough to just feel those things while you were writing. And so it means a lot to hear that that was your experience reading it, because I often think that we confuse the emotion that we feel and putting that emotion honestly on the page with being the same thing as letting a reader feel something. And sometimes it is the same thing, but sometimes it's not. Like, mm-hmm. like just because I'm writing a chapter that's extremely happy doesn't mean that I'm going to deliver that happiness effectively to the reader. And that to me is the main challenge of writing. Like, how do you deliver the emotion that you want to deliver to the reader in an honest way, but also in a way that's I think there has to be some mediation there. There has to be some sort of, it's not artless, it's artful. Mm-hmm. You know, there has to be some sort of structural like system to deliver it. And so I really didn't know what the book would read like to other people. To me, it's like an inside joke with myself. Mm-hmm. And I do think about things for a really long time, and then I write really quickly. I marinate for ages, and then kind of until I can hold the whole book in my head, which isn't to say that I know everything that's going to happen, but I can hold it in my head like a place that I've already visited, and then I can go there. Wow. And so the patience involved in that is important, but also sometimes I don't know that that's what I'm doing. Like, obviously, like, you know, between 2013 and 2018 was when I sold the book, I wasn't sitting and meditating on this story every day. It was just kind of in the back of my mind, evolving as I turned into a new person. And the book that I just finished is a similar thing. It came from a short story that I wrote in 2017 and thought about, and its meaning changed over time for me, and it came to mean something new during the pandemic, and then I wrote the book around it in one kind of fevered burst, and not a joyful burst, a different kind of thing, but still like an emotional experience. And so I guess this is how I write books. I don't know. I'm still learning. I still don't know, you know, like, I don't know if two is enough for a pattern, but it seems to be the way my brain works. And And who knows if that's healthy. Only time will tell.
I mean, I think, you know, one thing that people say all the time with books that they really love, or, you know, that is a high watermark for a book that is unique, idiosyncratic, is, you know, the book is speaking its own language. And when you talk about feeling like you had written, you know, your own inside joke, were able to put that into places in the novel, or kind of imbue the novel with that spirit, I think that is really the joyous aspect for me as a reader. And I think for many people who love this book, because when a writer is doing that, and even if you aren't tracking what the connections are initially, or how things are aligning, what, you know, structurally is happening, even if that's not all registering on a first read, the fact that a writer is in the zone enough where they're able to speak their own language and trust the kind of free association and kind of intuitive nature of what's underneath the narrative and even forefronted, I think is so exciting, because then you just know that you're going to be reading something surprising. And I mean, what's better than that? I think, I don't know. I think that's such a wonderful feeling to seek as a reader. So there's no question. I'm just rambling at you about your book.
I have a question for both of you. I mean, what is it that you think prevents us from getting to that place as writers? Is it just publishing? Is it just the pressure of knowing that it's a thing you're going to have to sell? Or is it something more than that? Because I, you know, the Temporary came out during COVID, like at the very beginning of COVID, and when, like, right when New York shut down. And so I didn't really have the normal book experience, and which only hammered home for me the feeling that the only thing that matters is the process of writing itself. In terms of my life, like, obviously the book goes on to live a life of its own that has nothing to do with me, but for me, you know, you can't count on anything except that moment alone playing, you know, in the dark with ideas and without anyone's influence. And I feel like that's the most magical part. So, like, what is it that makes that so hard to access? What do you think? Is it just like the world intruding?
That is such a good question.
I just don't know. I'm like genuinely curious. I don't know.
I think, like, so I'm just thinking about, like, you're absolutely right. Like, the moment where the book is yours and it's your thing, and it's yours because you aren't, like, you haven't yet asked people to look at it, or you haven't yet, you know, asked, you know, your agent what he or she thinks, you know, and it's yours. And so you're making it this thing, and it really is like play. It's like you're building your fortress, or, you know, like you're sculpting something out of whatever. And that is the best feeling. And I think I chase that, and I think I all too often assume that that's enough. And so I think, well, I mean, I love it, you know, and I'm happy with it and proud of it, and people will get it, you know, and that sometimes that's not true. But I think the feeling of writing toward what you think might work or what people might want is a bad feeling, because then that's not really you, you know, that's not really like what you have to offer. But it's not easy, because I think all too often sometimes those books don't sell, you know, like, or sometimes they do, like, often, you know, they do, but like, and when they don't, it can feel like, oh shit, like maybe I don't have anything to offer, or they're telling me that this book is too similar to all these other books, and maybe I'm just a, you know. But I can remember, I can access those moments where it was mine, and, you know, I really believed in it and believe in it. And so you just have to go, okay, well, I'm going to go try to find that feeling again. I don't know if that answered your question, but I think what you said about those moments alone where you're making the thing, and it's just you and the thing you're making, are what matter.
It's so hard to reverse engineer it too, because no one in publishing was saying, I want a book like Temporary. And totally. You know what I mean?
They really weren't saying that. Well,
right. Like, because, like, that book doesn't exist in, like, this book had to be created and put in front of someone that was going to say yes. And like, it's amazing that books like this get published in a way, because it really takes someone who's willing to take a chance and say like, whoa, what is this? This is amazing. Like every book like this, and by which I mean out of the ordinary in any way, it's amazing that it exists at all. Like it's, I don't know. It's hard for me to not think of the relationship between the feeling that we're talking about and publishing, because the feeling you were just describing, Lindsay, like very similar to what Hillary was saying, it's also possible that you could send out that project and someone's going to say yes. You may hit a person early and they're going to be like, yes, I feel the same way. And there's such a conditional quality to that at the end of the process that seems to like confer legitimacy, but really it's just, we're just dealing with another person's opinion and they may or may not agree with you.
Right.
So it's frustrating because it's not real. It's so hard to put an accurate value judgment on that in relationship to what you felt during the process. And I mean, I'm on submission right now and it's like, you deal with reckoning with exactly what we're talking about the whole time.
Yep.
Because you're dealing with notes coming back and you're like, yeah, I see that. Or you're like, ah, I don't know. Like it calls into question the veracity of everything you felt during the process or everything that was told to you by people who felt the same way initially, who may not be the people who are decision makers. I don't know. It's impossible to know, I think.
Yeah. I think to myself, like, well, you know, like I have a voice and it's my own, you know, cause everyone has their own and it's been hard won. And, you know, everyone goes through that where they finally stop trying to write like Alice Munro or whoever they love and they mm-hmm. write like themselves. And so I think like, okay, well that's what I have to offer. But then when feedback comes back and it's like, yeah, you know, I can see this is a talented person and I like this book, but nah, not for me. Then you're like, oh, like I have to do something, you know, it's a mind fuck is what it is. It's just.
Lindsay, you are a great writer. This book is brilliant. We don't want it.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Exactly. Oh, thank you.
A classic response. That's like mm-hmm. textbook.
Oh yeah.
I think, yeah. I mean, like I have to believe that there's inherent value to the making of the thing itself. And whether or not, I mean, obviously we're writers, we want someone to read our work, you know, and when that doesn't happen, it's disappointing. And on submission for temporary, I had to kind of invest in the delusion of like confidence in this thing because I had felt such joy when I was making it, and I didn't want the experience of sharing it to cancel my experience of making it. And I think that like those are the two experiences, and they're like two rooms that are adjacent to each other. And sometimes there's a door that lets you into the other room and sometimes there isn't. But it doesn't mean that the other room doesn't exist, right? Like it's you're in the room making this thing, and just because someone won't let you in the publishing door, it doesn't negate the joy or the sorrow or the love or the curiosity or the, like, you know, whatever you felt when you were making that thing, like that was real. And so I really believe, and maybe it's easier to say because temporary, like, you know, found a home, and if it hadn't found a home, maybe I would just be bitter about this, but I really like invested all my faith in the experience of making it and then just convinced myself that everything else was out of my control. And that was the thing that I chose to believe in, the truth of my own process of creating it and how much that meant to me, you know?
That's like the best way to protect your gift. You know, yeah, you have to protect it. And yeah. And like, that's your thing, you know, like, and that's just, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And it's hard to do, but that's right.
So hard. I say this now, but like rejection is a is a bitch, you know. Like, of course it was, and it was really, it's really tough when the thing in your heart is just like constantly getting hammered, because it feels like your heart is getting hammered. It feels like a, it feels like heartbreak, you
yes.
know.
Yes. Yes.
It does feel like that. You're right. That, I mean, it really does. Yeah, it does feel like that. I hadn't thought about it that way, but it's so obvious.
Like, I think the, like, my ideal, oh, this is going to be so corny. No, I'm going to say it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
My ideal emotional state for writing is like being in love.
And yes.
And not being in love with myself or like with the words I'm writing, but like in the sense that when you're in love, everything is like bright and intoxicating, and you know, everything is heightened and you're curious about everything, and like, and in a 24-hour daydream, you know. And I think that's the feeling that I want when I'm making something. And so then when someone doesn't want it, it does feel like someone rejecting you. Like, mm-hmm. it really feels like getting your heart broken. Mm-hmm. But I think that's beautiful too. I don't know. Like, heartbreak is such a painful emotion, but it's also delicious a little bit. It's also like you can wallow in it a little bit. It's a little bit bittersweet. It's a little bit, I don't know, it's a little bit like tub of ice cream in a Meg Ryan movie. Like, so I don't know that I mind it, because it's like, it feels like if your heart is broken, then you wrote what was in your heart.
I'm just, yeah, no, I mean, that's, I think you're just in a more evolved person than I am.
No, I'm not. I'm petty and I have no self-confidence. And no, this is like, you're catching me at a very, like, I just, like, I had a drink. I had some lasagna. I'm like in a very,
oh, what a dream.
Mood. I know.
Oh my God. What's better than lasagna? I think it needs to be talked about more just in general. Lasagna nothing is better. God damn.
Can you talk a little bit about working with Emily Books?
Yeah. Oh, it was, well, thank goodness for them. Right.
Big fan, big fan.
Oh, they were amazing. I got to work with both Emily Gould and Ruth Curry, and they, you know, they both were, they're just wonderful. You know, I just feel really lucky that they found something in my book that, you know, resonated with them, and to be in that lineup of women is just, I'll be proud of that forever. You know, I think what they did for publishing I think they actually changed the type of books that are published. And I don't think you can say that for very many people. I think that when they started publishing, you know, weird books by weird women were outliers, and now it's kind of the norm. And it's, you know, it's what my friends who are not writers and not in the industry, it's what they look for. Mm. And I think that they had a big hand in changing that and making that part of the mainstream.
It does feel like the norm in an amazing way. Like, amazing. I hadn't thought of it that way until you said it, but it's so true. When you think about some of the books that have really been huge lately, it's like really weird books by female writers. Like,
yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. And I really think that's, I mean, it's for a lot of reasons, but I think they're a big part of that. And they just were so ahead of their time, and they have such vision and such good taste. And I just, yeah, I just feel, I will always feel grateful to them. And I wish they were still around, but I know they'll, you know, be doing other cool, exciting things down the road. So
because a lot of our listeners are writers, are people who have books on submission now or are hoping to get books out on submission soon, can you tell us a little bit more about, after the book was bought, what the process of editing the manuscript was? How heavy was the work that you were having to do before publication? Was the manuscript close to what, you know, we read now? What was that process like?
Yeah. Well, like side note, I'm actually on submission now too, Alex.
Oh
So
my
I feel your
God.
pain.
Yes.
Yeah, and we don't have to talk about that. We'll just pretend it's not happening. We did something kind of weird. We sent the book out in 2017 to editors, and I had the opportunity to get, some feedback, some rejections, and I had a phone call with some notes, and was getting the sense for how people were responding to the book, and I had some ideas for changes and revisions that I could do, also ways to expand it a little bit. And so I asked my agent to pull the book from submission, and I took about 6 months to revise it. And she
Wow.
did, and luckily the editors were, I mean, none of them bought it in the end, but they were willing to read the revision. And so we pulled it from submission. I really took my time, kind of the reverse of the way the book was written. I really just spent a lot of time thinking and not writing, and then kind of came to some structural decisions about the book. I did this huge, the biggest edit of all was, naming the state of permanence that the temp is looking for. There was not named in the original draft of the book, and I named it the steadiness, and it was like the most exciting moment for me as a writer,
Oh,
because I
wow.
realized when you name something in a book, it suddenly takes on a life of its own, and I didn't know that. I didn't know about that. And so by naming it and giving it kind of took this shape, and it suddenly became this thing that was easier to understand and contextualize, and it had like all this mythological energy to it that I think was not there. And so then we sent it out again in 2018, and Emily Books and Coffee House Press bought it, and the edit was really light because I had really put a lot of time into it. And I know people are different when it comes to sharing work with their agent or sharing work with an editor. I tend to not send anything to my agent until it's done. And by that I mean like it has a beginning, middle, and end, not that it's perfect or that it's, not going to change more along the road, but I don't share chapter by chapter or partials of things that I'm working on. I tend to send like a whole finished thing just because oftentimes my books are kind of puzzles to me and I don't really know what they're going to be until I get to the end, and then I go back and mess around with everything. And so the version that we sent to Emily Books was really far along and it was pretty polished. And then the work that Ruth and Emily did on it was just strengthening what was already there and finding connections that I maybe hadn't seen in the manuscript. I think they suggested one extra chapter, which I wrote, and I fixed the ending, which like the ending and the beginning are the hardest parts, right? And so the ending changed maybe the most of anything when it was already with Emily Books, but there wasn't a lot of editing beyond the standard copy edits and proofs that you have to go through and continuity stuff. And but that's because I'm crazy and I'm really a perfectionist about about everything. And so I had worked it to the bone before we gave it to anyone.
The moment where you pulled it from submission and took the 6 months, did you have to work yourself up to that decision? Because I imagine that would have been, I think, I just thinking about myself, I feel like that would be so difficult to do. I feel like, thinking like, well, maybe the next person's going to say yes to this. Or did you just know based on notes you were getting or based on just something internal that you were like, I have to do this?
No, I wanted to die. I was like,
Yeah, okay. I'm
I
so glad you
was
said that because otherwise I'd be
like,
like, you're a mutant. I don't know what's going on.
no, I'm not. I didn't. I was like shaking. I didn't. I thought maybe it was a huge mistake, but and your listeners know, like when you know something can be better in the thing you're working on, nothing is going to stop you from doing that the thing, right? And I had all these thoughts about what could be better and what could help everything coalesce a little bit more evenly and make everything make sense. And so no one was going to stop me from doing that. And I actually didn't realize we could pull the book from submission. I didn't know that that was a thing. And my agent was like, no, yeah, it's a thing. you can do that. And so when she gave me permission, I gave myself permission to just take awesome. It back.
Can you talk a little bit about the book that's out now, or does that feel too jinxy?
No, I can. It's, well, if it's jinxy, we'll find out. And
maybe it's the opposite of jinxy.
Yeah, what's the opposite of jinxy? Yeah. Lucky? Here we go.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. So I wrote this short story and, in 2017, it's called Terrace Story. That's also the name of the book. And it's about this young couple with a baby, and they live in a very, 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 very small apartment. And they have a friend who, whenever she comes over to their apartment, their closet turns into a terrace. And
oh my gosh.
#. Blessed. And you know, it doesn't go well. It's a mess, and it ends kind of tragically. So it was a short story, published it a year ago, and you know, never really stopped thinking about it. And then during the pandemic, thought about it more because we were all suddenly trapped inside. It wasn't just my own small apartment claustrophobia, but it, like, everyone was feeling the same way. Mm-hmm. And so I had to kind of come back to that feeling. And when we were editing the story and sending it out to magazines, you know, I got a lot of pushback about the character of the friend and what her deal was, because she's very mysterious in the story. And I was really reluctant to divulge anything about her. I felt like the whole thing would fall apart if I did. But then I thought, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we just went back to the beginning and saw the whole thing from her perspective? And so then I did that. and then I, you know, kind of like went back and thought about the other people in this family's orbit and thinking about the ways that we think about space as it relates to home and family, but also the planet and how we're all dying and everyone is gonna die, and it's about grief and love and the end of the world, you know, the usual things.
Another joyful book.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a departure. Yeah, it's not as happy as Temporary, but I'm really excited about it. I wrote it in kind of like the same state of like feeling like I had a crush on my book, and it was really fun, and now I'm in agony just waiting to find out what's gonna happen. But no, I'm really excited about it. It's very different from my first book, which is fun. I always want to do different things.
I want it right now. I need it to be published immediately.
Oh thank you so much. Well, I'm knocking on wood.
Yes. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like teaching writing at the same time that you're writing?
Hard.
Yeah. I feel like Alex and I think about it a lot for not being professors ourselves.
It's so different with, you know, just buddies of ours that are day in, day out professors in Zoom rooms all the time, in classrooms, whatever. I feel like there's such a different tenor to that than occasionally teaching a workshop here and there. It's like, right. I feel like it's not even comparable.
I mean, I will say I really burnt out during COVID, and I was teaching a lot, and I sort of took a step back this fall and over the summer. And I'm just teaching undergrads at Columbia right now, which I love, but I was doing too much, and I almost I couldn't stand the sound of my own voice anymore. I hated having to have an opinion about everything. Because I didn't feel like my opinion mattered, because everything was the worst, you know?
Yeah.
And, I really needed a break, and it was important because I had forgotten the space that not teaching leaves for imagination and just dreaming and thinking and considering and not knowing. And I do try and bring that into the classroom too, the idea that I don't know everything. You know, I hate when teachers are like the judge and jury on how things are supposed to go, whether it's a writing class or a literature class or whatever it is. But that wasn't your question. What's your question? Oh, how do I write? Well, in truth, I write very little when I'm teaching. And but I think a lot, and I do most of my writing when I'm not in the classroom. Because it's a different part of the brain to think about someone else's work. I think it can help you. You can bring those tools back to your own work, but I struggle with doing both simultaneously. It's really hard.
Yeah, and I can imagine like they have lots of questions about publishing and career and stuff like that. And it's like the teacher answer and then the writer answer might be different.
Yes and no, which is part of why I love teaching undergrads, because a lot of them won't want to be writers, and so then it becomes, well, oh, we're just all learning how to think together. You know, where we're just learning about the value of words and sentences. And I am much more comfortable in that space, because I am so suspicious of any sort of teaching that is about, this is how you write a book, or this is how you get that book published. It's like, is it? I don't know any story that's the same as another person's story. So I just feel like I have no authority on that subject, and I'm much more comfortable with the idea of we're all just gonna read books and read each other's work and learn how to be better humans and how to express ourselves, you know? And so and you get that with undergrads, and some of them are amazing writers, you know, and so some of them will become writers professionally, and that's great too, but the focus is less on like how do I get an agent because they're 19, you know. Although I know some of them are probably thinking about that. I certainly was when I was a
I
fry
was
young.
so I was like I changed my major from like theater to business,
You were a
and
theater kid?
I was, yeah.
Hey, what's
What's up? What's
up?
up? And I was
Things
like,
like
yes,
you.
I because I had this thought that like, oh, I should probably know about business for when I'm famous.
That's the most Lindsay shit ever.
Oh my God, I love
Love
that.
And then I was like, oh, I hate this and I'm bad at it. And then yeah, so yeah, age 19, thinking about that kind of stuff, I don't know.
Yeah. Like thinking about the movie version of it, you know?
Yeah,
Right.
exactly. Yeah. This has been such a delight.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on.
I feel a little starstruck.
What?
Oh
I'm
yes.
starstruck.
I've been talking about it all week, like, oh, we're gonna talk to Hillary. So this is awesome.
That's ridiculous. Thank you. This was so much fun.
I cannot wait to hear that you've made a book deal, and I can't wait to know
Yes.
when
You
I get to
kidding me?
hold the book in my hand and read it with my hungry eyes. That just came up.
Oh my God, keep going. Well, I'll start beatboxing.
Oh, good, you. Anyway, yes. Good.
Great. Hillary was so open about everything in a way that was so wonderful to hear.
Yeah,
I
and
mean, it.
also like centered and not like doesn't sound like she has tortured herself in any way, which is good.
I mean, it's such a singular book, and I'm so glad that it exists, like we were talking about before, because I think that, I don't know. A lot of these books, it could be an easy no for an editor, I feel like, but then these amazing books get through, and it's so awesome.
And it's so worth it. And like, this book feels like a water slide. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
it like does. It's like you're just flying at a certain point, and then you come to a splash landing, and it's exhilarating. It is
exhilarating.
I was looking at my Goodreads review of it. I gave it a 5-star review, and and I think I said it was a thriller, a philosophical thriller or a thrilling philosophy. So hire me, New York Times book review.
That's really good. I like that.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. It's so fun. And also there's a lot of like deep shit in there. And I remember as I was like going through it again, I remember the feeling of like laughing, but also the top half of my face in a cry, you know, when that happens, when you're like, and then you're like, why is my, you know,
yes.
That's what it feels like. It's because it is very funny, but it's also like there's some deep stuff in there.
Definitely. I wrote down two writers' names as I was rereading it that I was like, I feel like this is a combination between these two people. Scott Bradfield.
Oh.
And Mary Gaitskill.
Mm.
And the reason was like, I feel like I had like some of the decentering prose of Scott Bradfield where you're just like, you're kind of making the face you just described, Lindsay. Mm-hmm. But then also like it has like a real sharpness and darkness to it as well, mm-hmm. in a way that I love, like Gaitskill. I don't know. I was like, I felt like that,
mm-hmm.
that combination somewhere in there. And if they liked musicals, like those two people, and they love musicals or something.
and I know that this is only in my head, probably. No, because they do speak with each other. J. Robert Lennon's Subdivision,
mm-hmm.
is a similar type of bewilderment.
Yeah.
And like,
and Hillary reviewed that almost book.
A dystopian. And that's right. And you pointed that out, that she reviewed it for the New York Times.
Totally. Yeah, so, you're right. Like it would be interesting to think about them together. It would be interesting to read them kind of back to back, because yeah, there definitely is some similarities.
Just like sharp, so smart, so funny. Mm-hmm. And just, where did this come from? How do these people's brains work?
So what have you been up to? You've been writing, you've been reading.
No, I haven't been writing.
Okay.
I have not. I really haven't. I've been thinking a lot about this book I want to write, though. And so I feel like that can count. I'm going to give myself credit for that.
It all counts.
Because like I did sit down and try to start writing it, and the voice was all wrong. And I realized I'm going to go a different direction. It's kind of hard to put into words. I think I was coming at it. I really want to be in this person's head.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than the way that I was initially writing it was like how you would see her. And I don't want that. Mm. I want that work to be done by whoever reads it. So anyway, so I have this idea for this like running. Oh God, it's going to, okay. I almost said stream of consciousness. I can't do that. Okay. I'm glad I'm getting this out because anyway, that's where I'm at. I'm thinking about that. And like what that voice would look like and how I want it to be funny and accessible and not like fucking, what's his name? Dubliners. Okay.
Sure.
Anyway. JJ. Right. Good old JJ. I started reading Brendan Matthews' novel. We're going to talk to him next.
Yeah.
And it's called The World of Tomorrow. And I love it. Awesome. It is so good. It is like, he's bringing in all these different characters, you know, like all these different storylines. It's set in 1939. Anyway, it's so good. I'm really enjoying it. So I can't wait to talk to him.
Awesome.
Next week. What about you?
I've been working on, I was working on my podcast voice, and then I was going to drop my podcast voice. I want to do a full episode.
Oh God.
I'm going to start laughing. I have to think of my phrase that I always say. And so. What I realized about myself is that no one I knew or that I loved really knew who the real person that I was.
Oh my God. It's too good. It's too good. And I listen to those podcasts, and that's what's so chilling. I listened to all of them.
I'm like, who the fuck are these guys that talk like that? There's like a whole army of guys who are just like,
they all want to be Ira like, Glass.
I don't get it. I'm like, what is that voice? It's not a real voice. Mm-hmm. Oh God. Damn it.
I think
imagine
it's like
hearing that person sing. Like you'd want to kill yourself.
Oh God. I don't know. I feel like it's like a, I don't like, I'm sorry for my voice, but in a, almost like a hubristic way. Is that a word?
You know, totally. They're like leaning into the badness.
Yes. Yes.
I think that's it.
That's it.
All right, bud.
Next time.
Next time.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm a Writer But is recorded by Alex Higley and me, Lindsay Hunter, in our respective basements. Editing by Lindsay Hunter. Music by Max Loop. Yeah!